You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Farad. Coming up, the Elizabeth Kingia bacterial outbreak last year in Wisconsin sickened more than 60 people, and 18 people died from the infection. We'll learn about an international effort to solve the mystery behind that disease.
Yesterday, David Rank, the United States' top diplomat in China, announced his resignation. According to reports, his departure came after President Trump's decision to withdraw the U.S. from the Paris Climate Agreement.
Rank's departure isn't the only sign of friction between key U.S. diplomats and the White House. The president's tweets about London's mayor and then about Qatar and other Middle Eastern countries may further complicate already tense U.S. foreign relations.
Arshad Mohammed joins us now. He's the diplomatic correspondent for Reuters. Arshad, welcome to Central Time.
Nice to be here.
Well, can you tell us a little bit about the context behind David Rank's departure?
Well, it's a very surprising thing for somebody who's been an American diplomat for as long as he had been, more than 20 years, to resign over policy. As you said in your intro, what our sources have told us is that he felt that he could not defend President Trump's decision to withdraw from the Paris Climate Agreement. He called a town hall meeting at the U.S. Embassy in Beijing yesterday, announced to the staff that he had decided to leave for this reason. And we're told that as soon as the administration in Washington found out about it, he was asked to leave immediately. To have an American diplomat pull out of their job like that is very, very rare.
And diplomats are, by nature of the job, they are nonpartisan, correct?
Absolutely. I've covered the State Department for more than, it's almost 15 years now. I don't know what are the political views of the vast majority of the diplomats that I've dealt with. Most of them take it as a point of pride that they're not going to tell you whether they're a Democrat or a Republican. A number of them that I've actually talked to about this over the years say they're independent. That's deliberate. Their purpose is to serve whoever is the president who happens to be in power, and they take that as really an article of faith in their profession.
David Rank held a lot of stature in his post as his top diplomat. What was the state of relations between the U.S. and China when he made that exit, and do you see his departure changing that balance?
You know, I don't know that his departure is going to change the overall balance of relations, because that is set by matters that are way, way above his head. The nature of U.S. relations with China has really been on a roller coaster over the last 6 months or so. Some of the things that President-elect Trump did during the transition, for example, taking a phone call from the president of Taiwan, upset the Chinese mightily. Since then, however, President Trump has hosted the Chinese President Xi Jinping at Mar-a-Lago. He's made a much greater effort to try to get along better with the Chinese, the climate decision notwithstanding. And so relations are on a more kind of steady keel now than they were, say, or than they looked to be 6 months ago. But I think someone like Mr. Rank's departure is not really going to affect the broader picture.
And are you seeing echoes of that kind of tension between other top diplomats around the world, the State Department, and the White House at this point in time?
It's clear that there's tension. On a whole host of issues, American diplomats say privately that they find it very hard to defend positions that the administration, the current administration, has taken. Probably the most vivid demonstration of that was a letter of protest that was written by roughly 1,000 American diplomats and other State Department officials protesting against the original travel ban that President Trump sought to impose on citizens of seven mostly Muslim-majority countries in January. Those kinds of protest letters are rare. They're usually signed by one or two or a handful or maybe a dozen people. And for 1,000 people to say we're opposed to this is a really powerful signal. I spoke to a former senior diplomat yesterday who said that the way he sees it is that the State Department, in a way, seems to have taken against President Trump, and that there is almost a kind of pathology now where almost regardless of the positions that the White House adopts, there's a lot of mistrust on the part, on both sides, really, on the part of the diplomats on the one hand, and on the part of the White House on the other.
Can you explain a little more what you mean by taken against? How has that played out?
Well, I think it gets played out in a variety of ways. I think that there is a propensity on the part of the State Department officials, or some of them, to kind of look at anything the president does and be prone to criticizing it. You know, one of the things that you mentioned in your intro that's topical today is what is the U.S. government's position on the half dozen or so Arab nations that have cut diplomatic relations with Qatar. Yesterday, I talked to a bunch of current and former diplomats, and they all said Qatar is too important a country to be isolated this way. We need them militarily. We need them diplomatically. The United States is going to work quietly to try to patch things up here. Today, President Trump put out a tweet that in some ways almost seemed to be taking credit for the decision by some of these Arab nations, Saudi Arabia and others, to sever ties. That shows a disconnect, or it would suggest a disconnect, between the rank-and-file diplomats and the White House. And that leads the ordinary State Department people trying to figure out, well, what is our policy, and do we agree with, normally the policy is whatever the president says, do we agree with that policy? And if we don't agree with that policy, well, what are we doing here? Can we defend that? And Mr. Rank apparently decided that he couldn't defend the president's policy, and that's why he decided to retire.
Arshad Mohammed is with us now. He's Reuters diplomatic correspondent, joining us to look at tensions between diplomatic officials and the White House. And Arshad, the interim ambassador to Britain, Lewis Lukens, tweeted his support recently of London. London's mayor, Sadiq Khan, and a day later, President Trump had this fight with the mayor on Twitter. So looking again at the jobs that ambassadors and diplomats may do to be a mouthpiece for the United States, to smooth things over, to put things into context, is there a simple sort of the job is getting more difficult factor?
You know, I think there's no question but that the job is getting more difficult. I may be mistaken, but I thought the chronology was different. I thought that...
Yeah, I think I misspoke. Thank you.
No worries. So the president issued his tweet kind of taking out of context something that the mayor of London had said. And subsequently, later in the day, the U.S. chargé d'affaires, the top diplomat, Lou Lukens, essentially supported the chargé. And, you know, what Ambassador Lukens did, he is an ambassador, is kind of standard operating procedure. You know, a country suffers a tragedy or is victim of a violence of this sort, and you try to stick with them and show your solidarity. And in any other era, what he did would have seemed completely normal, natural, unexceptional, typical. What's different here is that the president manifests his views of things through his Twitter account, and in the case of that tweet, it's been widely viewed as his criticism of the mayor of London was misconstruing what the mayor had said. You know, the mayor said you're going to see a heavier police presence. Don't be alarmed by that. The police are there to protect you, and that's why you're going to see it. The president suggested that the mayor had said don't be alarmed, even though we've just had this attack. So, you know, I wrote a story about 6 months ago where internally a State Department official asked on an internal message board, what do we do when the president tweets? Is that policy or is it not policy? And how do we handle this? And this is playing out in real time now, 6 months later, as people try to figure out, you know, is what the president says, even though in this case it appears that he misconstrued what the mayor of London had said, is that our policy? And if so, do we not express solidarity with the mayor of London as he grapples with this attack? It's immensely difficult for the career professionals nowadays to figure out what to do and say.
Arshad, is this the type of incident that you may have seen before with new presidents who might not understand how sensitive each word is that falls from their lips, or in this case, a Twitter account?
I think there's a learning curve for everybody. There's certainly a learning curve for presidents. There's also a learning curve for secretaries of state. I'll give you an example. When former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton went to China on her first trip as the United States top diplomat, she made a statement to us that were the reporters traveling with her to the effect that we can't let issues like human rights with the Chinese get in the way of cooperating with them on the huge global issues like climate change and like the global financial crisis. You might think that if you're the U.S. Secretary of State. In fact, you probably do, but you don't say it out loud because you don't ever want to be seen as giving a pass to China or any other country to not respect human rights. So there's always a learning curve. I think here the learning curve is maybe steeper for President Trump because he, unlike most presidents of modern times, had not been a politician or a military officer before he came to this job. And so it may be taking him longer to learn the rules of the road on how you talk about these things. On the other hand, it could be that he's not really interested in the niceties here, and he's going to say what he thinks, and he's going to call a spade, and that the career diplomats and civil servants are just going to have to get in line with that or go. Early in the administration, the White House spokesman, I think when he was asked about the letter of protest against the initial travel ban, said something to the effect of they can get with the program or they can leave. And that was kind of chilling for a lot of people, but it may be that that's the kind of unsavory choice they feel. You know, either you do as the president asks, or if you feel that you can't, you make the decision that Mr. Rank did in Beijing, and you retire.
Arshad, thanks a lot for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Arshad Mohammed is Reuters diplomatic correspondent. He was with us to look at tensions between diplomatic officials and the White House.